There's a lot in Genesis 3. I'd like to focus on just a few verses today. It's in verse 17. It's when the thing that happened between Adam and Eve and the serpent, it's God's response to what had happened. I'd like to note a couple things about it today. Verse 17 of chapter 3, then to Adam he said, "Because you've listened to the voice of your wife, and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, 'You shall not eat from it.'" And you know, we've talked about this before, how you can't hang this on Eve. He was the one that was given responsibility. He did listen to the voice of his wife, but he didn't step up. He could have stepped up, but he didn't. "Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread, until you return to the ground, because from the ground you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return." It's a pretty sobering passage when you think about it, just all the different things that implies for the human race, for the descendants of Adam, which we obviously are. It's the legacy of the first Adam. It's not all of the legacy of the first Adam. The other part of the first Adam's legacy is that you and I have been created in the image of God. And just because Adam and Eve disobeyed God, it doesn't mean that that has changed. We are still made in the image of God. So in the first Adam, we experience everything that was just described here. In the second Adam, we find renewal and we find deliverance. Have you ever wondered what the answer to the question is, why are things the way that they are? I mean, think about all the different things you bump into. You know, why does that happen? Why do people do that to each other? How can people do those kinds of things to each other? And it all finds its root in an understanding of what actually happened when Adam and Eve made this choice. "Because you've listened to the voice of your wife, have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, 'You shall not eat of it.' Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life." You know, we have a privilege of living in one of the most opulent times in history. You talk about a beautiful time to live from just the human perspective of escaping some of the things that have been caused by the sin of Adam. But we're very unique in the world when you look at the numbers of people in the world and the regions in the world. "Cursed is the ground because of you, in toil you eat of it all the days of your life." And I found that no matter how comfortable I am, no matter how much I have, no matter how much I accumulate, I'm still in the midst of a toil environment. Things still have entropy. You make something, it eventually falls apart. You clean something, it eventually gets dirty. Everything decays, and that's what's being described here. "Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you. You will eat the plants of the field." So not only do I find myself in this adverse environment, but even the plants themselves are after me. They're after me to hook onto me, and to cut me, and to cause me to bleed. "By the sweat of your face, you will eat bread, till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return." I'd like you to turn over to Proverbs 16:25. You know, this is where Paul, I think in Romans, says, "Who will set me free?" Who will set me free from the body of this death? He's contemplating the circumstances that we find ourselves in as sons of the first Adam. Who will set me free? Proverbs 16:25, this is actually in chapter 14 too, but they just kind of pop up in the list of Proverbs. Proverbs 16, verse 25. "There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death or futility." So in Adam, and as a son of the first Adam, there is a way that seems right, that is exemplified in what happened in the garden. It made sense. It made sense to eat from the tree. It made sense to respond to his wife in the way that he did. It made sense to Adam. But there's a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. That's the legacy of the first Adam. We're made in the image of God. Even though that image is diminished and is marred because of the conditions that we've just read about, it doesn't change the fact that we are indeed made in the image of God. But we also are sons of the first Adam. And so for us to live victoriously and for us to live successfully, we can't follow the pattern of the first Adam. We have to follow the pattern of the second Adam, which is a lot of the transition that Rod was just reading from in 1 Corinthians 15. Paul is trying to explain the difference between the first Adam and the second Adam. But let's remember that verse, that proverb right there, as we go in to look at a couple of passages on the second Adam. There's a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. This is all going to make sense related to what I was talking about living intuitively here in a little bit when we talk about living related to our gut. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 15. There's actually two passages in 1 Corinthians I'd like to look at. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 22. We actually can start with verse 20 there. Now Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who are asleep. For since by a man came death, by a man also came the resurrection from the dead. So the first Adam brought us death. The second Adam brought us the power of resurrection. For as in Adam, everyone dies. Remember what he said to Adam? You're dust. And to dust you're going to return. And in that sense, in the image of Adam, you and I have no choice. We will return to dust. It's going to happen. But as in Adam all die, so also in Christ all will be made alive. This is a great passage, but pop down to verse 45. Just for our time here, or the constraints of our time. So also, as it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living soul. That's just what we're talking about. He became a living soul made in the image of God. In order to be a soul, you have to bear the image of God, because God himself is soul or spirit. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. Why was that necessary? Because in the first Adam, everyone died. And when we died, we turned back to dust. But in the second Adam, the life-giving spirit brings alive the person who was dead. That's the nature of the gospel. That's the truth of the gospel. Now, you can look at your struggle and think, well, you're 70% successful or 50% or 20% or whatever. But in God's mind, you are 100% successful because the life-giving spirit has been given to you and put within you and put within me in order for us to find the way of the second Adam. And the way of the second Adam is one of redemption. It's the one of buying back. It's not of returning merely to dust. It's returning to the dust of the grave and then resurrecting with the life of God, which obviously we know. Flip back in 1 Corinthians 2. And, you know, basically, Paul, in this argument of this book, is contrasting what it means to be a fleshly person or to be a spiritual person. A first Adam thinker, there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end is the way of death. Or to be a spiritual person and to think like a second Adam. Verse 14. But a natural man, a son of Adam, does not accept the things of the Spirit of God because they don't make any sense. They're absolute foolishness to him. So everything inside of you that is the last Adam, all the vestiges of the last Adam that you and I live with every day of our lives, those are all part of the natural man. And the natural man doesn't step up. The natural man shrinks away. And not only that, the natural man goes a different direction. Because the natural man has to choose what is right for him or for her. But a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God. They're foolishness to him. He cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised, spiritually understood. But he who is spiritual appraises all things. Now think about this. So if you want to be a follower of the second Adam, you need to be a spiritual man or you need to be a spiritual woman. In order to do that, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to appraise everything. What does it mean when you appraise a house? You know, I can look at my house and I can say, oh, I think my house is worth $250,000. You know, and somebody who's looking at it might say, well, I think it'd be worth $275,000. But what really matters? Well, what you can get for it, and also what the appraiser has to say. The appraiser is like not emotionally involved at all. It's just the house. He's got a job or she's got a job. They do their job and they say, Dave, your house is only worth $190,000. Now, I can rant and I can rave about that, but the appraiser is the one who understands the market. I have all kinds of things I could say about Jim Manderfield right now, but I won't. Which leads to this in verse 16. If this is true, if the spiritual man, and this is kind of what I wanted to get to today, if the spiritual man or woman appraises all things, it doesn't mean that the spiritual man or woman is going to be 100% perfect. It just means that the process starts with appraisal. Verse 16, for who has known the mind of the Lord that he will instruct him? And I just love this. This still blows my mind. I can't get my arms around it. But we have the mind of Christ. Why do we? Because we have the Spirit of grace inside of us who is always appraising all things. It's not like he needs to sit there like an appraiser and say, well, I'm gonna take care of this little thing right here. He's always appraising. He's always appraising the difference between what is of the first Adam and what is of the second Adam. So just a couple of word pictures there to think about. Now think about your own life. I don't know if you're a good appraiser. I kind of overdo it on the appraisal thing, you know, because, you know, I know the word really well. I know my foibles really well. I know my shortcomings really well. So I'm always like, for years, I was trying not to make any mistakes, you know. You don't want to do the wrong thing, right? You want to do the right thing. That's what it's all about, is doing the right thing. And I don't know that there's necessarily anything wrong with that. I think that the law is good if one uses it lawfully. But I have something so much greater than my obedience that lives inside of me. I have such a greater calling for my life than to just merely do what is right. I can experience a spiritual exercise that allows me to avoid Adam and embrace the second Adam. And for me, that boils down to stepping up. Okay, well, what does that mean? Does it merely mean to be obedient? And that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit today related to this gut part of us, this intuitive part of us. And, you know, it's a new year. It's time to shift gears and think about what's going to come down the pipe in this. And some people say it's come down the pipe, so choose whatever you want. Intuition means quick and ready insight. Now, the dangerous thing about intuition is that you've got the two Adams. You've got the natural man who cannot appraise spiritual things. Then you've got the second Adam, the Spirit of grace living inside of you, who can, who is able to appraise those things. Intuition, if you think about your gut, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about that inside of you. It's not just a matter of doing the right thing or the wrong thing. It's a matter of intrinsically knowing, because of what's inside of you, which way to go. Which way to go on the path. So, under intuition, immediate apprehension or cognition. So I'm defining it here, going to my Webster's. Knowledge or conviction gained by intuition. And it's also the power or faculty of attaining to direct knowledge or cognition without evident rational thought and inference. And I thought, oh, so, you know, I'm not bound by being rational. That's kind of nice. I like that definition there. So I can be irrational and still find my intuitive life. And see, that's the rub. That's the rub. You can very much go by your gut and still be very, very carnal. But if you spiritually appraise things and work based off from what's living inside of you, then you are following the pattern of the second Adam. Is there one thing that the second Adam did not do well? Can you think of one thing? One way he let down his father. One way that he let down you. One way that he let down humanity. I can't think of it. If I understand the story, I understand that the second Adam fulfilled everything. He appraised everything. He used the law of God. He used the reality of his human tent that he lived in. He used his 100% godness that he was, and he appraised everything. And he explained, and not only explained, but showed us. And gave us an example of what it means to live in an intuitive way from a spiritual perspective. So, what I ended up boiling that down, because you know, obviously I wasn't safe just saying, well, I'm going to go by my gut in 2018. It basically means quick and ready insight. Quick and ready insight. Now, my argument for you is that inside of here, with the Spirit of grace, inside of here, with the Spirit of grace, you always have quick and ready insight. It's always there. All you and I have to do is appraise. We appraise. And in that process of appraisal, and what does that look like? You encounter a situation. You encounter a feeling. You encounter a circumstance. And you appraise it before God. And you say, God, what is happening right here? What are you doing? What do you want to say to me and teach me about? Because I know that I am your chosen son or daughter. I know that I have value to you because I know what the word says. And I know that it's not about being perfect. So the right thing is something I just wanted to develop a little further because it's not just a matter of doing the right thing. Okay, so I've given this some thought, and there's nothing inspired about my conclusions here. But I think I've done a reasonable job of explaining the core of the first Adam and the last Adam related to this intuitive part of who we are as it relates to appraising all things, which is my goal for today. So when I think about doing the right thing, there's a part of me that goes, okay, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbors, love yourself. You shall not covet. You shall not bear false witness. You know, I know the commandments. I understand them. I love the commandments of God. I think the commandments of God are so freeing and they're so beautiful. But in the commandments of God, I also know that they might help with the appraising process, but there's something way more powerful that can help me. And so I wrote it down here. It's my friendship. It's my friendship connection. Do you remember where Jesus was talking to the disciples in that intimate passage in John chapters 10 through 17? And he said, I have called you friends. I have called you friends. So it's not just a matter of me determining what's the right thing and what's the wrong thing to do. I want to look at my friendship. I want to look at my friendship connection with God. And that's where I want to do the appraising. If my friend If my friend were standing here with me in the circumstance that I'm facing, how would he respond? And how would he want me to respond? This has so much to do with tapping into the wells of compassion that God has placed inside of his children because of the great compassion that he has. So for me, the right thing involves cultivating and consulting my friendship with God. I can speak to God as a man speaks to his own friend, which I think came out of the Bible too somewhere. Second of all, and we've alluded to it, the idea of the fact that his spirit is within me. We've talked about this for years, about the voice of the spirit. Is there anything more difficult to do than to hear the voice? First of all, to discern the voice, which is what appraising things is all about, but then hearing the voice and distinguishing it from the other voices. The spirit within me is the only hope that I have of being able to distinguish the spirit's voice. Now, the word of God helps me. The people of God can bless me in that process, but when it comes right down to it, it's his spirit within me that shows me what the right thing to do is. Because, you know, it's often not just doing the right thing. It's having the compassion to do the right thing because you love somebody. And because you even love somebody who is unlovable, which is, I think, where it gets tough. My friendship connection, his spirit within me, and then with that, as I listen to that, as I appraise that, and what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to describe as best I can that appraisal process. So I get in touch with my friendship, I think about that reality of the spirit within me and that voice that's within me, and then my choice to consult, to ask the question, I've already alluded to it, what is it that you are doing here, God? I want to understand what you are doing. Everything inside of me wants to come out on top. Everything inside of me doesn't want to be looked at in a negative way. But what do you want, God, in this situation? And I know in here, my choice in consulting God is that God wants me to ask about the way of humility in the circumstances and in the relationships that I find myself in. So it's great to listen, it's great to consult, but what about listening? So hearing and doing are incredibly important. Now, I'm not just talking about doing the right thing. I'm talking about asking God, what's going on? What is the right thing? And what is it that you want me to do? And then when he tells you what to do, do it. That's what I'm talking about when I'm thinking about intuition. And with that, I obviously, that's not always going to be a pleasing choice because there's a way that seems right to a man. But in my first Adam nature, I choose death rather than choosing life. My passion to follow his voice. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to challenge you because I'm being challenged, okay, by the Holy Spirit. First of all, to define this for me, I'm doing my best to tell you my experience as I'm thinking about this. But when a new year comes, and you've known me long enough to know that I like to look back and I like to look forward. And as I started that process about 2 weeks ago, I feel like God said, I want you to live a more intuitive year. So the conclusion I've come to is I plan my way. I'm a planner. I'm a doer. I come up with a plan, and really, come hell or high water, I stick with the plan. That's my nature. And I'm not sure there's anything I can do to change that. It's how I'm gifted. It's how I'm made. It's kind of in my DNA to be that way. But what I think God is asking me to do is to be more intuitive in the situations and the choices that I'm making with how I am spending my time and my energy in this coming year. So what does that look like? Well, I've already done 5 things in the last 2 weeks that I probably wouldn't have done if I had not gone through this process, because it wasn't that the things didn't make any sense. It's just that I had other things that I was going to do. I had other plans for my time because I have planned my way. And now, five times in these last 2 weeks, God has, through this process, he has changed it for me. And so I've allocated my time and my energy differently. Now, that doesn't mean that everything that I have planned is just going to fall by the wayside. But it's already opening up ideas that, you know, there may be other ways to accomplish what I have planned. Which is interesting. It's kind of a byproduct of this thinking. So I'd like to invite you on that journey together. I don't know what goes on inside your head when I talk like this. Maybe you're thinking I'm crazy as a loon, and I could understand that. Joe, you don't have to nod so quickly when I say stuff like that. But I'd like each of us, with our backdrop of who we know and what we know about God, to ask God to help us in our relationships, in our choices, in how we are allocating our time over this next year, to be intuitive in this way, where we look at our friendship connection, where we look at his spirit within us, where we make the choice to consult God and express our willingness to listen to his voice, and then when he speaks, to follow it. Because hearing it's one thing, it's another thing to do it. And I'd just like to kind of track that. And, you know, if you feel like that happens for you in any way, shape, or form, in a different way than it is, type me an email, dave@foxcreekcenter.com, and just say, hey, this happened the other day. Two sentences. I'd be interested in that, because that'd be helpful to me if you'd consider engaging in that process in this way. And I'll try to bring it up now and then, just to make sure that I keep my eye on the ball. So we got about 5 minutes, and I'd like you to pray about this subject and see if God brings anything to your mind as you pray. For you.